Goddess Radio. We can also be heard on Spotify, iHeart, Amazon, and CastBox. And remember, love, kindness, and respect is never wasted. The only thing that is wasted is a day without a smile. We will see you on the radio next week, and this is Jennifer signing off.
Good morning, and thanks for listening to Film at 11 here on your community radio, KBOO Portland. KBOO is a volunteer-powered community platform, which means we are funded by you, the listener. This morning, Mona Bowen joins us again for a survey of some recent movies and television shows. And you are listening to community radio KBOO Portland. Please consider becoming a member today. And here's a special announcement. Look for a special screening event from hosts the Portland Critics Association to be held at the Hollywood Theater in November. The PCA is a group of local movie reviewers that dispenses Best of the Year awards, hosts screenings, and stages educational events. Go to PortlandCritics.com for more information, including previous annual best film lists. Okay, here we are again with Mona Bowen for another half hour of scintillating film talk that you can't get anywhere else in the world, I guess. Anyway, welcome, Mona.
Thanks for having me.
So what do you want to talk about first? I suggest Poker Face.
Yeah, let's talk about Poker Face because
the second season up. And that's the season finale just was aired last week. And my reaction to it was all the episodes were really good.
Yes.
And the whole Columbo mimicry technique was really sustained through all those episodes. And then we come to an arc of three stories that are all interrelated that conclude the season. How do you feel about all those?
Well, it's so funny because I did do some online looking, I guess, to say what other people thought about this, because the last few episodes maintained the flavor of the show and the rhythm mm-hmm. of the show, I guess I would say. You know, it did have that Columbo-esque, and they really leaned into it as well. Mm-hmm. I mean, there is actually a couple of moments in one of the last episodes where you actually see Columbo, right? So in a
right.
cool way. And I really, really enjoyed that because there's a lot about this show that's very wink, wink, nudge, nudge. You know, it's not, you can't watch this show. It's got a loosely one foot based in reality, obviously, right? But I love the world of the show that Rian Johnson has created. And even though The last episode, I know people had some issues with some of it, but I thought it was hilarious. I thought it was very, very funny. We're left wondering. I cannot wait for the third season.
Oh, yes.
What is going to happen? You know, and the analogs, you know, that's not the right word, but Charlie Kale, who is the main character who no one can lie to. And that's why she's a human lie detector, and that's why people are after her. She also drives an old beater car that's constantly in danger of falling apart.
It's a Barracuda.
It's well, I don't want to say anything if you haven't watched the end of the season, but don't get too attached. And also she has a definite kind of style. I mean, Columbo had his ring, you know, his raincoat. She has her, you know, her own, you know, vintage, interesting style. Also, they both have a catchphrase, you know, and I loved it. I felt like the tone of the last couple of episodes were different, I think, especially with the introduction of that the character,
right?
The other character that she's hanging around with the last three episodes, you know, but again, I'm here for it, totally right. For it in every way. The writing is sharp. It's so sharp. It's so funny. It's dry. I love it. It's so good.
Well, I was so surprised by the turn taken by that trio of episodes that I was pleasantly surprised and jaw-droppingly twisted in seeing the whole story from a new angle. Mm-hmm. That changed a lot of the instances. Not to spoil anything, but in the first season, she's being chased by somebody, and then she's freed of that pursuit in the second season, but then it starts up all over again from a different direction. But we knew that was coming anyway. But I did not see certain things that came that really took me by surprise, and I enjoyed it quite a bit.
Yeah, it was quite unexpected. I don't think we can. I highly recommend this show to pretty much anyone. Truly. Yeah. I rewatched the whole first season before I started the second season, and I'm so glad I did. And I will rewatch this season. It's a rare thing I feel on TV this day to find. Well, it's not really a network show. It's Peacock, right? But it's to find this kind of creativity and kind of bent sideways.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Ability, you know, with such quality writing, you know, and also just Natasha Lyonne, incredible. She really just is so good.
And there's so many funny and fascinating guest stars,
yes,
doing unusual things outside their usual character warp.
You don't see guest stars like this normally in this day and age. You know, maybe back in the day, the older guest stars on the Love Boat and Fantasy Island, but you don't have that anymore, you know?
Well, in those days, they were just other stars from other TV shows.
But right.
People from all over, from the movies, from music. It's just incredible. So anyway...
Yeah, that was Steve Earle as the truck driver in the last scene. So, I mean, come on, you don't know what you're going to get. I highly recommend I can't say enough about it. I love it. So
well,
good.
A movie that I cannot recommend is Superman, which is the latest iteration of the famous comic book character from the 30s and 40s. And it's, as probably everybody knows, it's written and directed by James Gunn. And... it stars this particular Superman is someone named David Cornsweet. I've never seen or heard of him before, but I'm sure he's got some kind of a background.
And also tries
to do something a little bit more creative with the character that I suppose would have been predictable if one had already seen Gunn's Guardians of the Galaxy movies, which are parodies essentially and comic in their presentation. And that's what happens here. He basically does, it's as if Seinfeld, who was a great fan of Superman the comic, decided to make his own Superman movie and turn it into a sitcom. It starts out without, basically in the middle of a sequel to the first movie, in which Superman is bested in some battle that we don't see. And all through the movie, everybody seems to have the upper hand on him. The Lex Luthor villain, the members of some kind of superhero team that come out of nowhere, even Krypto, the dog, has more control over Superman than anybody else. So it makes you wonder, what do people even want from a Superman movie? Do they want it to be campy? Do they want it to be corny? Do they want it to be funny? I don't know, because it's not really any of those things, and it's not particularly likable. Partially because the notion of Superman has been diluted by so many previous movies and TV shows and comic book stories that took off from the essential mythology into really weird places. There's all sorts of additions. For example, there's Krypto the dog. I guess this is a spoiler, but Supergirl makes an appearance at the end, and she could have been Don't Trust the Bee in Apartment C or what, or 23. Remember that show? Yeah. I mean, it's just like a party girl who travels to other planets. Anyway, he's got robot helpers that he's created in the Fortress of Solitude, which are supposed to not feel emotions, but obviously do. And even really more damaging in terms of creativity is that the movie, it's about a newspaper. You know, when was the last, the only valid or viable newspapers these days are, you know, neighborhood shoppers in Massachusetts, you know, where you get the latest news from of the neighborhood. The mainstream media has no sway. It should have been about, I don't know, it could have been updated in a way that, you know, this is like seeing a movie about a fierce competition between two train overlords. You know, like seeing a movie about trains. So anyway, the Fortress of Solitude gets invaded, and again, it feels like, shouldn't have this been set up in the first movie? And then you say, oh, this is the first movie. I don't know, it's all very confusing. Eventual drawback is that every other person in the movie, Lois Lane, the other superheroes, the villain being, and the monster beings, are way cooler than Superman, who's kind of a schlub. He's like the Mad Magazine parody of Super Duperman, in which Superman, as Clark Kent, is just a schlub in Mad Magazine world terms. Anyway, that was Superman, and I'm not really recommending it, but people will go and see it eventually anyway. What bothers me, though, is that a really good movie like Heads of State is so much better, and yet it's kind of getting laughed off the screen because of its casting and its premise and other things. Tell me why you like it so much.
Partly it was the kind of bonkers duo of Idris Elba and John Cena. Are you kidding me? Like, who would ever think to put those two together? I don't know, you know? I got to tell you, it works. I want to see them in more movies. They had great chemistry.
I know.
Like, they were having a blast making this movie, but maybe we should talk a little bit about it before we rave about it so much.
Well, I'll tell you that it's an unofficial remake of a movie that starred Jack Lemmon and James Garner from the 90s, where they play ex-presidents who are trapped on the road trying to get through Midwestern Southern America to stop a conspiracy. And one of them is obviously Reagan, and the other one is obviously Clinton. And it was mildly amusing in its day. Garner had something of a renaissance at the time. He was also in that astronaut movie with Clint Eastwood, in which he played the roué of the astronaut.
Yeah, it was all the old astronauts who had to go.
Yeah.
And see.
Yeah. So anyway, this is an unofficial remake of that ex-president's movie.
Except that these are actually, they're not ex. One is the current prime minister of the UK. And if you couldn't figure it out, that's Idris Elba. And John Cena is the current president of the US.
Who seems to have a very fragile ego.
Who is a former action movie star, whereas Idris Elba's character did actually see real action in some wars.
That's right.
There's a big conspiracy, of course. It doesn't matter. The MacGuffin is they end up having to try to escape with their lives and stop bad things from happening. And it's very funny.
Need to be said that they don't like each other very much at all.
Of course they don't like each other at all, because we have, I mean, I think you maybe, do you need to say that? I feel like that's probably implied with the setup, just based on what this kind of movie is, you know, like antagonists to partners in crime or whatever, right?
That's right.
And Priyanka Chopra also has a very big part in this movie, and it's really good.
It's terribly funny. It's extremely unpredictable. You think you know what's going on, then you don't, then you do, then you don't. And it's just has extremely high production values.
I'm surprised this was not, I'm sure it's on Amazon Prime for anyone who wants to watch it for free. It would not shock me to know that this movie has been released overseas as a big American movie.
Mm. That would make sense, because it is a big action movie.
It is a big movie. There's a lot of production here. Yeah. And it is very, very funny. It's so good. I would never have predicted that those two would be so good together.
Oh, yeah.
They are so good together. Like, and this kind of movie lives or dies on the chemistry of the leads, right?
Oh, yeah. You know?
It's one thing to have big set piece action scenes, which are really fun to watch, but these two together are, God, they're so good. Like, I want to see them in something else.
I hope that something else is called Heads of More States or something. A sequel.
I will watch. Yes. It was very, it has a lot of charm, and it's really funny, and I'm going to watch it again.
Now here's a movie that is, too small a movie for what it's trying to do, and that is Jurassic World Rebirth.
Really?
That's the title. Yes, and it stars Scarlett Johansson. It's set, I think, somewhere about 5 years ago, around the time of the previous movie, Jurassic World Dominion. And it is about a team of people led by Scarlett Johansson to trap and extract some kind of serum from the various crossbred dinosaurs left behind from that island in the previous movie. So it's just a bit of a disappointment as a movie. There's nothing particularly wrong with it. It's suspenseful. It just seems to be so derived from the Spielberg oeuvre, especially the Jaws predecessor. Jaws. There's all sorts of in-jokes and references to Jaws, to also other Spielberg movies. And it's almost like a strange form of fan service. And eventually two different parties grow to come together, and one a family and the other these soldiers of fortune. And all the acting is fine. I particularly like the man who played the father of the family. He plays the limousine lawyer on television, but I can't remember his name right now. And he
Ruben Delgado.
Oh, that's right. He is really great. And I'm going to mispronounce his name, but Marshala Ali is the main sidekick. And they made a really good decision when they got to the end of this movie.
Oh, no, no. Sorry, I got his name wrong. Please forgive me. His character's name is Ruben Delgado. It's Manuel Garcia Rufo.
Yeah, he's really great.
He's
really
great.
And so is Ali. And they made the correct decision when they had to face a particular decision about what to do with Ali's character. Anyway, it's fine. It's big. It's noisy. It's a, I don't know, a fireworks display disguised as a movie. And it is something that'll be on TV for the rest of your life. So you might as well just wait for it to be on the television screen when you're doing something else. But I'll tell you, you get reminded of how really good Spielberg is when you watch this documentary called
Jaws at 50. Yes.
We were on the real ocean and we were way out of our element for 5 months. And we all began going off the deep end, literally. The film was 100 days behind schedule. And 80% of the time, the shark didn't work.
There was a strong undercurrent that the studio would close us down.
I was terrified I was going to be fired. But I never once felt like I wanted to quit. And when the film wrapped, I had a full-blown panic attack. But the success was fantastic.
I thought this was a really fun documentary.
Me too. Yep. I loved it. I think that it's the definitive inside story is how it's
I can't think of any story that I know that isn't recreated or told or retold in this.
I don't think there's really anything new, although they do have a lot of really good talking heads of filmmakers. We've got and Janet Maslin, the famous critic, shows up. We've got Cameron Crowe, Greg Nicotero, James Cameron, J.J. Abrams, Guillermo del Toro, Steven Soderbergh, I mean, Emily Blunt. It's Robert Zemeckis, you name it, Jordan Peele. I mean, everybody shows up. Of course they do, because Jaws, for people who don't remember, was the first summer blockbuster.
And one of its distinguishing characteristics was it was a really good movie. It wasn't something like The Towering Inferno.
No.
A movie that took its subject really seriously, strove for profound realism in this otherwise kind of a not believable tale, and just jam-packed it with actors on all levels that were convincing in their roles. And the suspense was just incredible. All sorts of Hitchcockian misdirections are involved that showed that Spielberg was a real student of cinema.
Well, also, what a master he was of cinema, because of all the things that went wrong with this production. And generally, when you have a very challenged production, the movie does not necessarily turn out as well. For this movie to not just be a blockbuster because of the subject matter and everything, it is masterful movie making. It is a film class in making a movie like this.
That's right. I can't remember if they talk about Verna Fields, but she's the woman who edited the film.
Editor, yeah.
And it probably would not have been as good had she not been the editor.
Well, and let's not forget John Williams' score. That movie is not, I mean, so all the pieces that came together to make this movie, I remember years ago when John Williams was in the, director of Boston Pops for many years. There was Richard Dreyfuss actually did a thing where talking about all his film scores, and they showed a scene from Jaws without the score.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Nobody, anything. Then the orchestra starts playing it. Immediate. I remember it was very spine tingling to experience the difference and to see what a difference that score made. It's just every single part of that movie. And I think, you know, when you look at a movie like that, that's 50 years old, which is a long time, you know, it's easy to, you know, it's on TV. And I'm sure if I could find it streaming right now somewhere, and I bet it's playing on a channel somewhere as well, because it's never gone away. Right.
That's right.
I think a movie like that, which actually, I don't know about you, but if I do kind of pass it by, especially in the days of cable, I would sit and watch. You know, it was one of those.
Oh, absolutely.
Had to be like, nope, have to complete this because now I'm in it, no matter where it was in the film.
I feel the same way about films like North by Northwest.
Yes.
And that music trick that you described being done with Jaws, you could do that with Psycho. And
yes.
You get the exact the same effect.
Exact, you know, all the parts that go into a movie. And it's, but Jaws has been dissected.
Oh, I know.
In some ways, almost more than any other modern movie. I think because first blockbuster, famously troubled production. There's so much. Spielberg's first big movie, you know.
Yeah. And maybe The Godfather is up there somewhere in being written about so much. But Jaws, you can keep reading about Jaws and it doesn't diminish your enthusiasm or enjoyment of the movie.
Because you can still watch the movie and experience the movie as the movie.
Yeah.
And there's always something new to find, and just the caliber of the actors. I don't know. I can't say enough about it. I feel like this is a movie that maybe because it has been, it's so familiar to almost everybody. I mean, I don't know anybody who hasn't seen Jaws at least once. I mean, I've seen it over a dozen.
Yeah, same here.
And I'm sure I saw it probably three or four times that first summer on Cape Cod, which is where I watched it.
Oh, that's perfect. Oh, you should have led with that.
Went to the movie and then went right to the beach because I went to a matinee. And I got to tell you, that summer, there weren't a lot of people in the water.
That's funny. Yeah. Well, we got time to talk about one more thing, and cool. I think it's going to be Department Q.
Yes. Okay.
So tell me about it. I got to step away from the camera for a second.
Okay.
So
Department Q is, hang on. Sorry. I hope we can take a little break here. Here we go. It's a DPT, DEPT period Q, because there's another Department Q. So this stars an actor I would like very much, Matthew Good. He's a British actor. I think he made his bones in rom-coms, that kind of thing. He is playing a completely different part here. He is a former detective, or top-rated formerly detective, who had was affected deeply by an attack that happened to him as he was working a case. And his partner was paralyzed. He couldn't do anything about it. It was really very dire. Anyway, he goes back to work. He's very acerbic. I don't even know how else to put it. He's not a warm, friendly guy at all. He's very brilliant, but he's people don't want to be around him with good reason. So he is assigned a new department of cold cases, and they literally set him up in the basement of the building with, it was an old bathroom, so the urinals are still there. It's kind of hilarious. Anyway, he chooses a couple of other police people to help him who are also misfits, I would say, and they go after the case of a woman who disappeared several years earlier, and it was assumed she committed suicide. And the structure of this show is really interesting. The first episode kept me guessing from the first moment it started. There are two different storylines happening in the first episode. You don't know until the very end of the episode, are they happening concurrently or are they happening at different time periods? I was captivated, absolutely engrossed. And I can't say enough about this show. I literally binged it, and I try not to do that.
Oh yeah. So,
but I couldn't wait for the next episode. But every episode now is on Netflix. It is intelligent television.
Oh, that's true. And I love the secondary cast. Like,
yes.
I think the Iranian, I think he's from Iran. Oh, I can't remember, but anyway.
Yes.
He's good too. It's a great show. So, yeah, so we've gone a whirlwind tour of a whole bunch of things. Poker Face, thumbs up. Superman, thumbs down. Heads of State, thumbs way up. Jurassic World, it's okay. the Jaws documentary, loved it, and Department Q.
Yeah.
Some
good TV right now.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, thanks for talking to us, Mona, and we're going to get, we'll get you back in a week or two and get caught up on some more shows.
All right. Great to see you.
Okay, good.
Thanks.
Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
Oh, geez. How do I turn it off?
I don't know.
Oh, there it is. I got it. Thanks again, Mona. And thank you for listening to Community Radio KBOO Portland. But have no fear, Film at 11 will be back next Friday. So until then, keep watching the screens.
FM. If you're able, please go to kboo.fm/give to make a contribution in support of the critical work of community radio. Thank you.